Fortune favors the bold, and our guest today, Andrew Biernat, is definitely a bold entrepreneur. Andrew is a loving husband, a father of two bright little girls. He hosts a podcast, has written two books, and works at his local chamber of commerce, and he goes on business adventures with his extra time. Today, Andrew and I dove into his top five talent themes and how they have showed up in his life in the past and today in the present, as he's been on a professional and personal growth journey. And we had a lot of fun talking about his themes, but we also touched on a lot of serious topics, topics that most leaders are looking for the answers for today. So I know you're going to really enjoy this conversation with Andrew. His energy is contagious, so hold on tight and get ready for a great podcast. Welcome to the Navigating Your Leadership podcast, where we are changing the wave of the future. Like it or not, the world has changed, and as an exceptional leader, you have to change with it or risk being left behind. Hi, I'm your host, Sherry Miter. I'm here to help you navigate this new leadership style. Inside the podcast, you'll discover what your team really wants and needs from you, how to tap into your God-given talents, how to increase your productivity with a strengths-based team, and how to realign with your North Star to truly enjoy your work and your life. This podcast will inspire and empower you today so you can elevate your influence into the future. If you're ready to step out of your comfort zone, then untie those dock lines and jump on board as we begin navigating your leadership. Welcome back to the Navigating Your Leadership podcast. I am your host, Sherry, and today we are joined by Andrew Biernat. Biernat. I had to get that
you
right.
So,
Andrew Biernat. And we were connected recently by a mutual friend on LinkedIn. And I think because we were both podcasters. So, I'm excited about this conversation. We had another conversation a while back and it just flowed so easily. Great connection. And I just know you're going to add a lot of value to the listeners today, Andrew. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Great. So the hardest part is over, pronouncing your last name. So
it's all totally easy from here.
Goofed that up, but that's what happens when you are, a real person. So we were talking because Andrew and I could go in a million different directions to, offer great advice, great tips, great insights for leaders out there. But we decided what would be super fun is Andrew is familiar with the Clifton Strengths. So we're going to kind of break down his top five and have some fun questions and just kind of see where the conversation goes. But I have a feeling it's going to end up really amazing for all of you listening today. But before we jump into that, Andrew, why don't you share a little bit about who you are, what you do today, and how you got here?
Sure. Yeah. And I'll give you guys the short version. So for me, I've been on an interesting professional journey. I started off a career in sales, and that didn't go as well as I would have hoped because I was selling a product that I did not believe in. And, eventually I was let go for good reason because I didn't do a great job. And that got me soul searching and trying to refigure what I wanted to do. And then I had my first career change. So at that point, I switched to personal training and I really enjoyed that career. It was a lot of fun and I got to give a lot and help a lot. And through that time, I was able to write two books, create a course, and also create an online video repository for workout videos. And so we created like a whole online presence and it was an absolute joy. Learned a ton about video editing, a ton about writing, a ton about everything. And that career ended a little bit ago. And a big reason for that was actually COVID. And it took a lot of the fun parts away for personal training for me. So for me, it was a lot of the high fives, the high energy, the being close to people, being gathered around and really connecting in those ways was what had energized me about personal training. And when a lot of those things were taken away, I found that it was mostly just the hard stuff that was left. And some people love that stuff. They can nerd out about it all day. They think about it all the time. And for me, it was the softer stuff that I really found that was most important to me. And it was people. And once I realized that, I realized, you know what, I've been trying to make fitness work for a long time. And maybe what I'm supposed to do is work with people in whatever way kind of fits. And so I've just been on a journey of exploration since. I've been giving myself a lot of permission to explore and to experiment and to test. And as you've probably noticed too, Sherry, like a podcast is fertile ground for experimentation, for trying things out, for testing. And so I started a podcast, and it's centered around business. It's called the Build Your Business Better Podcast. And I've been able to interview all kinds of amazing business people, both locally and nationally and internationally. And it's really cool to be able to elevate people, to make people feel good. And at the same time, I've been going on business adventures at the same time. So I think entrepreneurship is maybe a strong word to describe what I do, but I think I like building, and I like creating, and I like experimenting, and I like testing, and I like seeing what works. And so for me, I'm very much in a growing phase right now, seeing what people are looking for and what people want. Love interacting with people. And so for me, I have a full-time job, and that full-time job actually came out as a result of my podcast. So I'd reached out to someone for an interview. They turned down the interview, but then they offered to interview me for a position that they had open. And so right now I'm working at a local chamber of commerce. And so I get to network. I get to experiment. I get to test. I have a lot of opportunity just within my job to do a lot of the exploring and learning that I want to do. So yeah, for me, it's kind of a broad spectrum. I've got a lot of interesting stories I'm excited to share. And I'm really curious to get the professional look at some of my strengths too.
All right, great. Yes. And I feel like a lot kind of the thread there we have in common and where we are today, both of us, you know, took our background, good and bad, and are in this place of, like you said, exploring and figuring out what's next. And I think there are a lot of people out there in that position that are trying to figure that out. Do I really want to continue where I am? Or do I want to explore something different? You know, some because they have to, and others because they can. So it's a unique situation we're in right now in the world, really. It's a global.
Yeah, and it's a very unique situation. And you look at the Great Resignation or whatever people want to call that, right? And what I see is not necessarily people that are like just leaving jobs in droves or disappearing from the workforce. I see people that are just searching for a better match, right? People recognize that, you know what, where I am right now actually isn't the best match, right? I've actually maybe gotten a little bit more money this year than I normally do that I kind of stashed away because it was a crazy time. And so I'm a little bit more open to experimentation. I'm a little bit more open to trying something different or new. And in the short term, I think it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard for a lot of employers. It's going to be hard for a lot of employees making transitions. But I think in the long term, when people are doing work that matters to them, when people are doing work that matches up better with their strengths, with their personalities, with their whatever it is they're passionate about, I think the economy and I think the country and I think individuals are all going to prosper because of that. Because I know for me, when I'm excited about something, I put more of myself into it. I put more energy into it. I talk about it more and I bring my A game to that. And I look at my previous career where I was not into it as far as the sales job I had. I didn't bring my best game and I didn't bring that best version of myself to what I was doing. So I'm very excited to see what comes in the next 5 years.
Yes, I could not agree more. I love what people are now calling it, the great reshuffle. And I think that's a lot of, I think there are a group of people that did leave the workforce who aren't coming back. The people who are already close to retirement and said, you know what? We're solvent. We're good. Peace out. I'm done.
Bye-bye.
Happy
nice
retirement. Yes. And, you know, they may come back consultant doing part-time things. Who knows down the road, but they're taking that early retirement or retirement finally. But there are the rest of the lot of a huge group, I should say, that are just trying to figure out like, you know, maybe the time has come. I've done what I could here. It's time to move on. Or they had that side hustle and now it's time to like, can we turn this into a full-time entrepreneurship business? Or do I just need to better align with who I am and our strengths and what I value into a new career? And I think, you know, like you said, I think 5 years is a good marker. I think there's going to be a lot of struggles between now and then for employers more than the employees. And I know we're going to kind of weave that in today, but I think it's going to be, I think I love the word flourish. That's my word of the year. And also thriving. And I feel like that's what we're headed for, people flourishing and thriving when they figure out where they really belong.
Yes, for sure.
So how did you find out about strengths before we jump into your strengths?
Goodness. So for me, it's one of those things that's like, it's just been around, you know, like you just hear about it, you know, in whether it was in a class or whether it was in a, you know, someone just talking about a strengths test that they did or a personality test that they did, you know, just it's come up so many different ways in so many different places. It's hard to pinpoint where and how. But for me, my first real interaction with it was probably about 5 or 6 years ago. My employer at the time, who was my brother in the fitness industry, he had everyone on staff go through and do their strengths. And so then we kind of sat down and kind of picked apart like, okay, so here's some of my strengths, here's some of your strengths, and recognizing that, you know, as an employer, sometimes they're tempted to hire people that are like them, right? Like, oh, we need more of me. We need more of me out there. And really, for a good running business, it's important to have a mix. It's important to have some different strengths within that business, because if everyone has those same strengths, then you kind of all have those same corresponding weaknesses, and you guys are going to have some gaps in your ability to serve and be at your best. And so that was wonderful. It was really cool to kind of get a glimpse at my strengths. And at that time, I was very early in my kind of personal growth and personal development time, and was really kind of digging into, you know, who is Andrew, right? Who am I? What's important to me, and what's my best way of contributing? And even just this past year, I've discovered so much more about how I contribute, how I do my best work, and where I am at my best. And, you know, I haven't opened my Strengths Finder book. I actually brought it with me. But, you know, I haven't opened it, you know, in years until we had our conversation. And then I opened it back up again, and I was poking through it, and I'm like, oh, that makes so much sense. Or, oh, I have so many more stories now that really attest to so many of the strengths from this test I took 5 years ago, but that is still very much what I'm seeing and learning about myself today.
Cool. And I love that, the personal growth journey. And I love, too, that your brother was brilliant enough to really create a strengths-based organization is what he was doing. He may not have called it that or knew that, but that's what he was doing. And you're so spot on. I always, you know, teach my clients that as a person, you are not necessarily meant to be well-rounded. You know, we pretty much are, you know, focus on one or two different strengths types, you know, of domains, without getting too technical in that. But as a team, you definitely want to be well-rounded.
Yes.
And that is how you create a successful team, is not to hire, because you're so spot on. I actually was just doing a workshop last week with a group. They were from the direct sales industry, which is where I came from. And they were so heavy in relationship building. Like, it was crazy. And when I showed them, we can do this team grid, and it shows the four domains, which are executing, influencing, relationship building, and strategic thinking. And they were all blue, which is relationship building, with a few over here, a few dots here, and a few dots there. And it was like, okay. And I asked the group, I said, what does this tell you? And, you know, first it was like, well, we like to recruit people like ourselves, or we like to have fun, or we like to do this. It's like, yes, but what does it really tell you? And finally, somebody got it, which is exactly what you said, Andrew, that, okay, we need to start recruiting other team members who don't think, feel, behave like we do, or we're never going to grow.
Yeah. And I think the hardest part, and just about growth in general, is discomfort. Because anytime you're working with people that are very different from you, that think differently, that behave differently, that just operate differently, it's almost like they're on like another planet. You know, it's like, why don't you see it my way, right? Like, it's obvious that what I'm saying is the right thing. Right. And they're very much oftentimes like, well, actually, it's obviously what I'm saying. And it's really that, the bridging of that gap, where in business, you get to win and you get to succeed, because not everything goes a certain way. You do need to hedge sometimes, and you do need to risk sometimes. And there's a lot of spectrum in between. And I think it's that different strengths and being able to lean on different strengths at different times that really allow a business to thrive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one more question for you about the strengths, and then we're going to jump into your top five. But did you unlock the full 34, or did you just do the top five?
Not yet. So I just did the top five with that one. I don't even know if they had, they might have back then. But yeah, as far as doing the deeper dive, I didn't even know about it until we actually had our conversation.
Mm-hmm. Totally unlock your full report. You will be blown away. Blown away.
I will.
And you'll have to share it with me when you do.
So. All right. I will.
Okay, so Andrew's top five are restorative, activator, context, strategic, and developer. And what we're going to do for the rest of the show is break down each of those top five. I'll give you the, you know, for the listeners, the Gallup strengths theme definition of each one. And then we have some fun questions to ask Andrew and just see where it takes us with the stories and how it's impacted his life and shown up in his life. So first one, restorative. And restorative, people exceptionally talented in the restorative theme are adept at dealing with problems. They are good at figuring out what is wrong and resolving it. So people hired with restorative basically thrive on problems. And I always say people with high restorative, if there isn't a problem, they will create a problem. And maybe you can relate to that statement, Andrew, but
goodness.
What I would love to know from you, looking through that restorative lens, how do you prioritize what to fix? Because you may recognize that in yourself, that you do see a lot of problems out there that maybe you want to fix. So how do you prioritize that?
Yeah, no, that's probably the hardest piece, right? Is I feel like, you know, my wife could probably tell you, you know, I'm good at spotting issues, right? And at the same time, you know, the way to solve issues isn't going to be the same every time. And the importance level or the urgency level of an issue is going to be different, right? And I'm going to use importance and urgency as kind of two different ideas. Urgency is like, there's a fire, there's emergency, we got to put that out. Importance is like, you know, there's an electrical problem that may eventually lead to a fire, right? But if we just keep ignoring the electrical problem, eventually it's going to create a fire. So I think for me, it's important to know what type of mode I need to be in, if I need to be in a very reactive mode or if I need to be in a forward-thinking type of a mode. And I like to think in the same way that my dad does. My dad's very analytical, like his office is full of books and just tons of papers. Like the man's like one of those disorganized geniuses, right? And he's very, very strong in kind of the Kaizen type concepts, leaning and Six Sigma and a lot of these other things where you're trying to find the bottleneck. You're trying to find that issue. What's that thing where if you open that one thing up, everything else works better? And for me with problem solving, that's what I try to do is I try and find that thing that once that is opened up, everything else can start to fall into place. And so I guess a recent story that would represent that is at the Chamber of Commerce I work at, we actually just combined with another local chamber. And that whole process was rife with problems, right? It was honestly super stressful. I hated it, but now looking back, I miss it. Right. I miss that. There was always something that I was working on. There was like something I was diving into. There was another challenge that I had to figure out how to make it work. Dealing with different sets of data, was dealing with website stuff, was dealing with many things that I'm not very good at. And I had to find ways to either recruit experts or to find people who did know what they were doing, as well as apply my own expertise and effort and try and bridge a lot of those gaps. So for me, it was definitely looking at the timeline because we had an announcement date that we were going to have. And we had to have a website up and running. We needed our email addresses to be up and running. We needed the branding to be ready and done. And so there's all these things that we needed, right? So knowing the timeline and then finding what the bottlenecks were, working on the bottlenecks first, and then getting to those other things that needed to come into play as time allowed for it.
I like that. And I like that idea of looking at the bottlenecks, which I'm going to bring this in here now in case we don't get to it. So I was listening to one of Andrew's other podcasts, which definitely make sure you check that out. But he shares on his 6 productivity hacks or productivity myths, I think it was. But you share about how sometimes a bottleneck can happen. And I might be getting the stories, but was that with the monkeys? Is that part of the bottleneck?
I'm trying to think. So that was problems.
Okay.
And that was being able to delegate problems.
Right. Which I feel like that is with leaders. I see that a lot, that because they take on everybody's problems and they don't help them figure out how to work through their own problems, that can create a bottleneck. So what advice would you give a leader, especially if they are high restorative, to keep that from happening? How do you throw back the problem to the people that you lead?
Oh, for sure. And that ties exactly into where I was, because there were certain things that are out of my wheelhouse. And like for me, I understand some web development stuff. I understand email and I understand a lot of that stuff, but I'm not like the best at it, right? I could figure it out and do it, but at the end of the day, it's going to take me a lot longer to do a lot of that stuff. And, you know, the monkey example, to give everyone some context, is, you know, sometimes you got a monkey on your back and it's a problem, right? And you're trying to get it off, right? Trying to get rid of the monkey. And so a lot of times when we have a boss or a superior or someone that we're looking to get to help us, we try and take the monkey to them, right? And we hand them the monkey and then we try and close the door and run away. And, you know, for anyone who's in a leadership position, people are going to bring their monkeys to you. Okay. And I think it's important to recognize their monkey, right? To calm the monkey down and for the most part, to give the monkey back to them. Particularly if you want your people underneath you to become leaders in their own right, right? To be able to lead their own careers, to be able to be a leader within their own job, to develop themselves into a bigger role at whatever it is that they do. And so by giving them that monkey back, you're telling them that they have the tools to get that stuff fixed, right? And so for me, we were lucky to have some, you know, people doing different contract work and stuff for us. So I could delegate to them. I actually came to them with a monkey and they were kind enough to keep it. And so that was wonderful. But at the end of the day, that monkey was mine, right? When it came time to do the brand launch and to do that whole thing, right? I was the owner of that monkey. That was mine. And that was mine to own. And so, you know, in a sense, I rented it out, right? I rented out that problem until we had gotten that fixed.
I love that. I just love that analogy. When I was listening to you explain that on the podcast, like, it just makes so much sense. What's that saying? Not my monkey, not my circus, or not my circus, not my monkey, however it goes. And I feel like so many times as leaders, sometimes as parents, we want to solve everybody else's problems instead of giving them that, like I said, have empathy and give them that belief. Go back, if you know their strengths, maybe even have that conversation. I know you can solve this because you have X, Y, and Z strengths, and I trust you, and I know, you know, I believe in you. Give them that affirmation, but then hand them back that monkey. You don't want all those monkeys in your office.
Yes. Well, so. Exactly. Because then you get overwhelmed, right? Mm-hmm. And then you become the bottleneck, right? Right. So often leaders are the actual bottlenecks within their companies.
Totally.
And it's because you're taking on too many other monkeys. You're not giving up. You're not giving them back. You're not petting them, calming them down and saying, okay, off you go.
Right. Right. And it sometimes takes more time to give back the monkey.
Yeah. Oh, very true. It's you know what? I'm faster at all this. I'm better at all this. And, you know, really at the end of the day, it's only when you do start giving away those things that aren't exactly your strengths, you give those to the people who it is their strength, right? That they get to do it even better than you could, even better than you would have expected because you gave them that opportunity.
Right, right. I have a sticky note on my desk under my word of the year. It says focus to flourish. And I put on here, just because I can do something doesn't mean I should do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, I talk about this on my podcast, and I've talked about it on some other shows too, is I'm a, what's called a multi-potentialist, right? And it's a fancy way of saying I'm a person rife with opportunity, right? I've heard from all kinds of people, oh, you'd make a great state trooper, or oh, you'd make a great politician, or oh, you'd make a great X, Y, or Z real estate agent, whatever, right? Put anything under the sun under there. Oh, you'd make a great that. And it's true. I would make a great, a lot of things. But I've only got one life and I've only got one chance, and that's right now. And so I'm going to be great where I am right now. And that's where I'm going to put my focus, right? That's what I'm going to put my energy into.
I love that. I love that. Which is a great lead-in to the next theme, which is Activator. So people exceptionally talented in the activator theme can make things happen by turning thoughts into action. That's why everybody said you'd be good at all those other jobs. And they want to do things now rather than simply talk about them. So how do you motivate those around you to get things done? Because as a high activator, it's naturally going to come for you to want to just jump in and get going. So how do you motivate those that you're working with?
So I tend to lean into some of my personality quirks, I guess you could call them. But you know, one thing is probably listeners have noticed, I'm relatively high energy, right? I've got a lot of get up and go. And I believe that our mood, our enthusiasm, all that's contagious, right? People pick up on that and people can cling to that. And for me, I'm able to share that energy and share that excitement and share that enthusiasm. And when I can do that well and when I can do that effectively, that helps push other people into action. And this is actually something really interesting that you're bringing up is, you know, in marriage, I've seen some of the challenges that I have within this strength of mine, because I look at every strength has some corresponding weaknesses, right? Where I tend to make decisions quickly and I'm a goer and let's just do it. Sometimes that leads into big, big problems, right? Is sometimes I move too fast. Sometimes I leave people behind. Sometimes I trample people. And so like all of those things, they come with their own baggage. And so understanding, particularly with my wife, Samantha, you know, she's almost like the opposite of activator, right? She's a little bit more contemplative. She likes to think about stuff a little bit more. Let's weigh the consequences. What could go wrong if we are to do this? And it's so funny, right? We tend to be attracted to our opposites. And she helps to balance that in me, right? And subconsciously, I recognize that, right? So it's only after we've been married and we've had a lot of conflict, right? I had a lot of times of me just bulldozing and trying to get something done while I'm leaving her behind because she's thinking about it and absorbing it more deeply, right? That I've had to kind of come down a little bit from how intensely I want to go, go, go. And she's had to step up a little bit with how intensely she wants to make sure that everything is safe and okay. And so, you know, for me with our relationship, one thing that I'll do is I will listen and affirm, as I'll hear what her challenges are, and I'll outline in a reasonable, loving, caring way why I think what she's worried about won't come true. Because usually our worries, the vast majority of the time, our worries never manifest themselves, but sometimes they do. And particularly in business, I think in business more even than relationships, I think in business, worries are important to keep in mind, right? Because worries usually represent risk. And anytime you make a move in business, there is some inherent risk involved with that. And it's important to understand that risk, but it's also important to take the risk when it makes sense.
Right, absolutely. And it's good to have with high activator, it is good to have that kind of almost voice of reason that sometimes says, whoa, let's just slow down a minute here, take a look at all the if and whats, and then proceed. And so I have activator in my top 10, it's in my 6 through 10. And I appreciate those people because there have been many times I've jumped into things and then, or said things, and then realize like, oh, that really wasn't a good move. I should have waited on that one. Mm-hmm. So it's good to have those people that we can balance out. But I love with the marriage, and that's where sometimes I see so much value, not just in the working world with strengths, but in relationships, because you know that about each other now and you appreciate that about each other versus continuing to let it be a conflict. It becomes a new way of communicating.
Yeah, well, and I look at, you know, our strengths and these different pieces of us. It's almost like an immovable object, right? I'm just gonna be a go-getter. Like I just go and I just do. And my wife is going to be someone that thinks, that is a little bit more cautious. And I used to think like it was just it was almost like a problem, right? It was something I needed to fix, you know? And thankfully, I've gotten to a point.
Your restorative wanted to fix that, right?
Exactly. I need to, honey, you know, this is a problem that needs to be solved. Oh, goodness, right? Yeah. So I've gotten in plenty of trouble over the years. But, you know, what I've come to understand is, right, that's just who she is. Mm-hmm. And so instead of trying to change her, I need to change the way that I react. I need to change the way that I interact in order to get what I think is the right thing to do. And sometimes I don't get the right thing, right? And it actually turns out that she was right. You know, it turns out that by doing it this other way, that turned out to be the best way. And so it's being able to modify that strength a little bit to then account for other people's strengths, right? Because her ability to think about the downside has helped us in many situations to avoid problems and challenges and other issues. And so it's important that I recognize, you know, some of her strengths in that and being able to be a little bit more forward thinking in that sense. And so kind of modifying my strength a little bit to meet her where she is.
I love that. I'm going to skip context. We'll come back to that, but I want to go right into strategic because I think your strategic theme ties in so well to what we've been talking about. And I can see how it plays with your activator and shows up with your activator to almost kind of take that. All right, because strategic, high strategic are able to kind of look at the whole picture and see where maybe there might be places to slow down. So, you know, when you're having that conversation with your wife in that scenario, to be able to pull your strategic, let your strategic play a little bit before the activator kicks in.
And that's honestly, yes. Now that you describe it that way, like for sure, that's exactly what's happening, right? Is I'm thinking like the bigger game, right? How do I actually get what I think is the right thing, right? Is I'm going to need to come down from this stance, right? I'm going to need to set the thing that I really want to do. I'm going to need to set that down. I want to go. I'm ready to go. But she's not ready to go. So what do we need to do to get us both ready to go, right? And then it's finding whatever she needs to then be at least going close to the same speed that I want to go.
Yeah, I like that. And so the strategic theme, the definition is people exceptionally talented in the strategic theme create alternative ways to proceed. Faced with any given scenario, they can quickly spot the relevant patterns and issues. So definitely ties in exactly what we've been talking about. I'm curious with strategic, because sometimes I have high strategic as well. Sometimes we can create so many alternative routes. How do you make sure that you don't waste time considering options before proceeding?
Yeah. So it's weird that I'm, you know, both activator and strategic, because sometimes I feel like they're definitely at odds with each other, because there's part of me that wants to like learn and strategize and plan and what's the perfect way to launch this thing. I'm going to blow it up and it's going to be awesome. And there's going to be times in there when I should have just done something. I should have just taken the step, right? And then there's other times where I just start taking steps and I should have planned a little bit better. Right. I should have thought a little bit better about that. And so there, for me, it's definitely like a constant interplay. And what I've been finding is often, at least right now, because of the growth journey that I've been on personally, I've spent a lot of time learning. And I haven't spent as much time applying what I've learned. And so right now, I feel like I've got a ton that's in there and ready to go that I can tap into. And it's just getting myself in those situations where I can then apply it. So I'm leaning more heavy into activator right now, but strategic is kind of always like in the background, like ready to go. So for me, when I used to, you know, dig more into video games, there was always more strategic video games really got me interested, where there were multiple systems, there were multiple layers, multiple challenges all going on at the same time, and having to sort out and problem solve and kind of figure out all that stuff at the same time has been tremendously helpful, not just for video games, but in my own life, being able to assess a situation and know whether do I need to just jump in and go, or do I need to research? Do I need to learn a little bit more? Do I need to do some planning? And so for me, it's almost like a seasonal thing. Some seasons I'm more strategic and some seasons I'm more action oriented. And I think right now for me just happens to be a more action oriented season.
I I love that. I love that. And I could definitely see that where you know, there are times that we do need to sit back and kind of plan and organize and maybe learn some more, maybe dive into something a little deeper before we do activate. But if we don't eventually activate, then nothing's going to get accomplished.
Yep.
But yet, if we don't take time to step back, whether it's because we have that strength or we partner with somebody that does, if you don't have high strategic, it's good to partner with somebody that does because they will save you sometimes time in the long run.
Oh, absolutely. So I'll give you guys a great example is I wanted to write a book a few years ago. I just got inspired. I'm like, oh, I'm going to go for it. And before I started writing, I read probably about 10 books on the subject of writing a book. So I was very strategic about the way I was going to go about it, the way I was going to do things I was going to avoid. Okay. But eventually it got to a time where it was time to stop learning and time to start doing. And that time happened sooner than I allowed, right? I should have taken action significantly sooner. But at the same time, being strategic in that way has given me a much stronger understanding of books, of publishing, of how that whole industry works. And I see better how it fits in different places. And I can leverage that better. I can lean into that better now because I do know so much more, because I was more strategic in my planning and my thinking.
Yeah, it's a balance. It really is a balance and finding that healthy balance for you, depending on what is the scenario. And I think that's a balance we can all learn to appreciate with each other and with ourselves as well.
Yeah.
So let's jump back up to context. So context is people exceptionally talented in the context theme enjoy thinking about the past. They understand the present by researching its history. So my question here for you is, how have any past mentors shaped your leadership today?
So for me, it's really funny just looking at these strengths, right? Because the past couple of years, I've learned a lot more about what I am really good at. And part of that is looking at the past. I love history. I love studying history. I love learning about what's worked and what doesn't work. And I very much believe that many things come up again, and particularly with people, right? Those same issues that were there before are probably going to be there into the future. And so if I can learn what those issues were, learn how to overcome them, then I can also figure out how to do better at those situations now and today. And so, you know, I think I shared a quote with you earlier, which is fortune favors the bold. And that's by Virgil. So that goes way back, like 2000 years old, that quote originally in Latin. And for me, there's two translations. There's fortune favors the bold and fortune favors the brave. And for me, I like the term bold better. Brave, I don't know, it just feels a little bit overused nowadays. Everybody's brave. And for me, I feel like bold is a little bit more intentional. And I feel like it incorporates the risk a little bit better, right? I think it applies better in a business context. And I look to the past as an example of what to do and what not to do. And it ties in very well with my strategic way of thinking, right? Because I'm analyzing the past, I'm seeing what other people have done, I'm looking at trends, and then I'm applying it to today, right? And then I'm taking action on it today. And so all those pieces, it's kind of funny how they just kind of like fall together into context. And so, for me, you also mentioned, a book I wanted to talk about or recommend. And one that I'm getting back into is a book called Expert Secrets. It's by a guy named Russell Brunson. You've probably heard of his company, which is called ClickFunnels. So it's basically a website-based company where you build a website, but that website has a certain purpose to it. And for him, he did a lot of studying and he did a lot of learning and looking at things in the past. And a lot of that learning came from, mail advertising, coming through his mail. He'd sign up for all these freebie newsletters and freebie gift stuff. And he would just look at the copy. He would look at the words that are coming in. He'd look at the sentence structure. He'd look at when is he moved to buy something. And in analyzing that and in seeing times that he wanted to do something, right, in the past, now he can apply that into the future, going forward. So for me, books and history and legacy, all of those things carry so much weight into the present because there's so many lessons that we can learn there and then apply it today, right now.
I like that. And I have, you know, I've personally looked at some of Russell Brunson's stuff and I've never thought of that in the context. It's like, oh yeah, I bet he is high context.
Yeah.
But because I remember reading that whole scenario with how he would get all the mail and then and turn it into how to use it today on technology.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. And it's, you know, because people are still the same, right? We just use some different tools. And every idea that we have today has been around for a long, long, long time, right? We're just finding maybe a new spin, maybe some new words, maybe some new application, right? But the ideas are already there. The ideas are already out there. And so many of those ideas, if we're willing to take the time to kind of sift through, we're going to find them and we're going to be able to apply them today.
I like that. So the last thing that we're going to talk about today is developer. And developer, people exceptionally talented in the developer theme, recognize and cultivate the potential in others. They spot the signs of each small improvement and derive satisfaction from evidence of progress. So what allows you to see the potential in others, or maybe even the potential in a project you're working on?
Sure. Yeah. So a lot of that is, you know, the idea of potential. I see it as optimism, right? I see it as, you know, the grass is greener, things are going to be better, the future is going to be great. And for me, you know, and actually my brother's very high on developer as well. I think it's number one, number two, and number three, very, very high up there. And so when we worked together in business, that was one of his biggest challenges, actually, was hiring people based on that developer trait, because he's seeing the potential in people, but not necessarily seeing where they're at now today. And so I think in spotting potential and in seeing opportunity, I can get really, I call it hypey, right? I get all hyped about stuff, right? I get like super excited about certain things. And my wife giggles nowadays about certain things I just get really excited about. Okay. And a lot of those things I get excited about are future opportunities, about things getting better going forward. We were at a dinner the other night, and I started talking about self-driving cars and how I think self-driving cars are going to be the same thing to the auto industry that the horse and buggy was to you know, driving a regular car now, right? I think it's going to be a monumental shift in the way that we transport ourselves around. And so I started, you know, I went on this like 10-minute rant before anybody even got a word in edgewise. And so much of that was in looking at the potential and seeing the future and seeing the opportunity that's there. And it's funny because now, because she sees and some other people see the downside, right? They see the negatives with some of the bad stuff that's going to happen, right? And I'm still activated, right? I'm developing like, woo! Here we go, right? Here's this bright, beautiful future. Let's jump in the deep end. Let's go. So yeah, it is kind of funny how all of these kind of work together in various ways.
Yes, yeah. And they make up, and I always say, you know, it's like when you look at your themes, is not to look at them as a horizontal or even linear line. It's really a circle. And whatever project thing, whatever it is that we're working on or what we want to accomplish is in the center. And we pull from different pieces of the pie at different times. And they usually do. There usually is a thread that goes through for each person because it truly is unique to you. And I don't know if you know this, Andrew, the chances that somebody else has the exact same top five themes as you in the exact same order is one in like almost 34 million. So you really are over one in a million. Yeah, like it's so unique to, it really is our DNA. It's our thumbprint, which is one of the reasons I love it. And I can't wait for you to open up your full 34 because you'll get an exact description that's going to be unique to you and how it shows up and the blind spots. Like you said, every side has a blind spot to watch out for. And sometimes it's how it can stop us. Sometimes it's how others perceive us. And, you know, so it's awareness we need to have, but then also those tips and stuff to move forward with that. And I bet in your the rest of yours, there's probably learner. I hear futuristic coming through. So it'll be fun to see what's in that 6 through 10.
Yeah, I bet several of those. Yep.
The rest of the report. But Yeah, with the developer going back, with that is developer, and I can see why you love entrepreneurship too, because developer doesn't mind starting from scratch and then building it from there. Whereas like there's maximizer, and we like to take something that's already really good and make it superb. Whereas developer loves that, the process of taking it from scratch, which I could see like what you were saying about your brother. That's a great skill, but if you're hiring people, that can be exhausting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're bringing in these people and they do have potential. They do have a lot of opportunity, but at the same time, there's a downside, right? Oftentimes they're not quite there yet. They don't quite have the skill set yet to do what you need them to do today. And so that's where there starts to be some conflict. That's where there starts to be some challenges. And that's where maybe people either stay on too long and they should have been let go. People don't get the right training that they need to, or, you know, or the wrong people get hired for the wrong job because they could fit, you know, I'll see, you know, whereas like, you know what, actually, I don't think you're going to be the best fit right now. That for sure, especially with hiring, developer is a very tricky one.
And I'm just thinking, and I know you and I were talking about this before we hit the record, that a lot of employers are going through that right now, a lot of companies, because they are having a lot of new hires or people moving into management positions quicker than they normally would. And if you lead with high developer, the first thought is probably like, ooh, this is so good. I can mold them how I want. But at the same time, it can, like I said, it can become exhausting. So it's being aware of that. And how can we speed up that process a little bit?
For sure. Well, and I think in the modern era too, I've had the opportunity to look at a lot of different job postings, and some of them, like, I just read down this like 20 item list of like qualifications that somebody needs to have. And I'm like, who is this person? You know, like, who's done all this stuff? And why are they going to settle for this job? They should have your job. You know what I mean? Like, they should be the one leading the company, like not this kind of middle level guy. So it's interesting to get the balance right, because you do need some stuff today. And at the same time, very few people are going to have every single thing that you need. And another piece too is there's going to be some strengths that people have that are going to outweigh any of the training that they've gotten previously, right? People that are willing to learn, people that can adapt quickly, people that can absorb whatever your culture is, that can lean into the things that you are pushing forward. Those things are almost more valuable, right? You can't teach someone integrity. Okay, you can't teach someone how to be an engaging and likable person, right? You've got it or you don't. And so looking at what some of the things you're hiring for, make sure that, you know, those that are in hiring positions, especially those with developer, right, you know, is make sure there's some stuff that they can do today, but also make sure that you're not trying to find this haystack one in a million kind of a person, because you're going to be looking for a long time. And in this job market, it is going to be extremely difficult to find just the right person. So I would caution those that are having a long list of wishes as far as who they're trying to hire.
Right. Good advice. Because right now it's the person looking for the jobs, they have the upper hand right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to make them want to come into your organization, not limit who's going to say yes to coming into your organization. You need to be a little bit more open arms, but find the right people that will fit the values, the core things, have the right strengths to be able to do the job well. They may not do it well today, but do they have the right strengths so that they can do the job well quickly, soon? They'll learn it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
So as we wind things down here, Andrew, anything else that you would like to add about, you know, any other tips for leaders out there or entrepreneurs? Anything else about your strengths that you would like to just throw out there to the audience?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's an old quote that I really like. Leader of one, leader of many. If you can't lead one, you can't lead any. And when you look at the Clifton strengths and you look at your personality traits, you look at what you're good at and what you're not good at, make sure that you're being a student of yourself. Be a student of yourself first and understand why you do certain things. Understand when you do have an outsized emotional response to something, more than likely, there's something there. There's some unhealed baggage. There's some challenges that you've gone through in the past that whenever that gets itched or triggered, right, you have a stronger response than you need to. And so as a leader, it's your job to be the one that takes care of you. Start there. Get your ship right before you try and steer other people's ships or before you start directing other people. And in doing that, you'll start to recognize how you need to shift your behaviors or your strengths a little bit to meet people where they're at, right? So for me, if I'm in a bad headspace, I'm not going to be very good at meeting my wife where she's at. Right? I'm not going to be very good at coming down from activator, right? I'm going to want to go, right? And anybody slowing me down is in my way. Whereas when I'm in a good headspace, when I am being a leader of myself, I'm able to recognize when I'm leaving people behind. I'm able to recognize when my strengths are not suited to a situation. And I'm able to lean on other people's strengths in those times. And, you know, it's easy to say, lean on other people. It's easy to say, just let other people take charge. It's a different matter to actually do that. Okay. Especially if you're a person that is a go-getter, or you're a person that has a tendency to do certain things and you know your strengths really well, it can be tough to let go of the reins and to allow other people to do what they can do and to do what they can do best. And so I guess my biggest encouragement, know yourself. And in knowing yourself, you'll know how to relate to others.
Great advice. Very good advice. And I know you just gave another quote in the, was it Fortune Favors the Bold?
Fortune Favors the Bold. Yep.
Yeah. And what was the book that you had recommended?
Yeah. So that book, for those that are interested, Expert Secrets by Russell Brunson. He's got a couple other books too. But that one in particular, I'm rereading it. A lot of it is because he talks about, I'll read the subtitle too. So, Expert Secrets, the Underground Playbook for Creating a Mass Movement of People Who Will Pay for Your Advice. So very much, if you want to be a person of influence, if you want to lead people, if you want to be setting the tone, setting the direction for things, if you want to have sway over people's buying habits and behaviors, this one is extremely powerful because it allows you to understand what it is that people are looking for. And, you know, for me, and looking back at the past and trying to get a better understanding of the way that people do things, it's tremendously helpful to get that level of context and understanding to be able to now bring that to current situations.
Great. Good advice. All right. Well, Andrew, I knew this would be a fabulous, fun conversation. Love your energy and loved diving into all your top five strengths. And I hope you continue to use them well and continue to be one of those bold entrepreneurs who are finding their way and doing such great things in the world.
Thank you so much.
My hope and prayer is that today's episode left you feeling inspired and empowered with some tangible steps to implement today. But honestly, the podcast is just the beginning. Through my coaching, my clients learn how to lean into their strengths to create their unique style of leadership, along with gaining strategies to create dynamic and productive teams. Teams with a mutual passion and respect for each other. Whether you just need a few small course corrections, or you feel like you need an entirely new ship to lead, I do love a challenge. I'd love to invite you to send me a DM. Or better yet, let's hop on a call and see how we can continue this leadership journey together. The link to book a call is in the show notes. I look forward to hearing from you.